This podcast is sponsored by Audible. Audible is the home of storytelling. They make it easier than ever to discover the right content to enrich your life. As a leading destination for audio storytelling, Audible has thousands of titles, including audiobooks, groundbreaking originals, podcasts, and so much more. I love listening to audiobooks on long car trips, which, of course, I'm constantly on because I live in Los Angeles and it takes 30 minutes to go 5 miles. Recently, I've been listening to Bossy Pants by Tina Fey, and it is perfect for commuting or driving around the city because it's so funny. I love that it's narrated by Tina Fey. It feels like she's telling me a story on my drive. Right now, you can get 1 month of Audible for free by using offer code UNRULY. That will get you one free audiobook to enjoy on your next long drive. Go to audibletrial.com/unruly to get your free audiobook. And let me know what you pick, because I want to know what to listen to next. Again, that's audibletrial.com/UNRULY to get your free audiobook.
Remembered in English history as the German princess, Mary Carleton is often presented as a rogue, a temptress, and a thief. Her legacy is one of shifting disguises and uncertain stories. Her many flights in the night are the stuff of delightful legend. But who was this German noblewoman? Where did she come from? And what does her story tell us about women in the 17th century? Welcome to Unruly Figures, the podcast that celebrates history's greatest rule breakers. I'm your host, Valerie Castellanos-Clark, and today I'm covering the tale of Mary Carleton, the German princess who shook the foundations of Restoration England with her remarkable life story. Before we jump into the tale of English intrigue, I first have to thank all of the paying subscribers on Substack whose patronage helps me make this podcast possible. This really wouldn't still be going if I didn't have you guys supporting me. And if you like the show and you want more of it, please become a paying subscriber over on Substack. When you upgrade, you'll get access to exclusive content, merch, and behind-the-scenes updates on the brand new Unruly Figures book. When you're ready to do that, head over to unrulyfigures.substack.com. All right, let's hop into it. Mary Carleton, the German princess, was born Henrietta Maria de Walway in or around Cologne, Germany in 1642. Her father was Henry van Walway, Lord of Holstein. He was well known in and around Cologne and had won distinction for wars between Spain and France. Both her parents died before she turned 3 years old, but they left her the entirety of their wealth. She was raised in the nunnery of Santa Clara and given a good education. While there, Henrietta decided that all that peace and solitude of a nunnery drove her crazy, so she left as soon as she was of age to do so. But then began her problems. As a wealthy orphan, she was positively beset by admirers. Soon, she decided to set out and try to meet the exiled would-be King of England, Charles II, because he had known her father and was, at that time, in Cologne. While seeking an audience with him, she befriended Margaret Hammond, daughter of Sir Richard Hammond. The Hammonds were a wealthy family from northern England, and the two friends decided to teach each other their respective languages. Within a year, Henrietta was fluent in English and Margaret in German. They eventually went their separate ways, each the richer for having met the other. But despite this adventure, an issue loomed. An older suitor, a much older suitor, was becoming possessive, and Henrietta was nervous. She was 18, he was 80. She simply could not imagine marrying him, yet he was pressuring her. So she fled, first through the Low Countries, today called the Netherlands, and on to England in search of Margaret or other friends. What she found was a new and worse trouble, a man named John Carleton, a handsome 18-year-old who was a member of the aristocracy. Practically on sight, John fell for Henrietta and begged her to marry him. He threatened to kill himself if she refused. His family, finding out who she was, pressured the two to marry, and they did rather quickly, about 2 to 3 weeks later. Then, more trouble. A mysterious letter arrived to John's father-in-law, and it said that Henrietta von Walway was not who she said that she was. She was a bigamist, an Englishwoman, and middle class to boot. I'm not sure which of these things the letter writer or John's family thought was worse, to be honest. The Carletons took Henrietta to court for bigamy. There, she presented a passionate testimony, saying that they had pressured her to marry against her will and misrepresented themselves. They were not aristocratic at all, but middle-class vintners and lawyers. She, a princess, had been deceived and trapped. The only thing she was guilty of was being naive and beautiful. Or at least, that's the story that she told. I feel like I need a record scratch sound here because almost everything I just told you was a lie. Mary Carleton, later known as the German Princess, was born Mary Motors sometime between 1634 and 1642. She would give different dates throughout her life. She was born in Canterbury, England, the same place where another famous storyteller was born, Geoffrey Chaucer. Her father was a musician, probably of Dutch extraction, and she grew up in the Dutch community around Canterbury. Like so many people from before the 19th or 20th centuries, we don't know much about her young life. She probably received a basic kind of humanist-ish education, though not one as thorough as a young boy of her time would have received. However, her father's genteel connections through his work provided her with, quote, unusual opportunities for education and finishing that paved the way for the rest of her life. She read widely and loved the romance genre, and the conventions of those stories also helped her form the stories she would tell about herself. In 1655 or so, she married her first husband, Thomas Stedman. He was a shoemaker. It's unclear how old he was or how they knew each other. If she was born as late as 1642, she would have only been about 13 at this marriage, which makes me think that she was born earlier. The age of consent for marriage had just been legally set at 14 for women in 1653, and parents needed to also give consent for anyone marrying under the age of 21. And also, I want to be clear that women at this time had a little bit more agency in marriage than is usually believed. If she had been adamantly saying no to this marriage, only a really corrupt vicar would have pushed forward. So it's very likely that Mary was not completely forced against her will to marry someone when she was just 13 or 14 years old, but rather married Stedman because it seems like a good match at the time. The story usually goes that Mary and Thomas Stedman had two children together, but they both died in infancy. Some people say that it was these tragic deaths that drove her to run away from him, but most people claim she left because he didn't make enough money to sustain the lifestyle that she wanted. In 1658, Mary married a surgeon named Thomas Day in Dover. Somehow, someone got wind that she was already married and she was tried for bigamy in Maidstone soon after. But the prosecution failed to prove that she had a first husband because Stedman didn't show up to testify. The next year, Mary ran off to Cologne, Germany. One historian, Kate Lilly, supposes that she might have gone as a lady's companion. There, while staying in an inn, Mary had a brief and steamy love affair with a local nobleman, though his name isn't recorded. Apparently, he gave her, quote, several fine and valuable jewels, a gold chain, and large sums of money. This nobleman proposed to her and began to plan their wedding, so Mary stole away in the night, taking his gifts and much of her landlady's money with her. She had a single servant with her who appears to have been in on the con because she backed up Mary's next claims, that she was Henrietta Maria von Walway, the orphaned German princess. Passing from Germany through the Low Countries, Mary sold most of these jewels and used the money for passage back across the Channel. She landed back on English soil in 1661 and arrived in London on March 31st. She took up rooms at a tavern owned by a Mr. and Mrs. King. To gain the sympathy of the Kings, she claimed that she was just 19 years old, then told most of the story that I opened with, that she was escaping a possessive older lover and that she was an orphan. She also told them she had an income of £80,000 per year, which is equivalent to 12.4 million British pounds today, or 15.6 million US dollars. With her maid's help, she set about sending some letters that would seem to confirm her wealth, drawing in the Kings to a conspiracy. If this sounds a little far-fetched, this was also the perfect time to be a quote-unquote dispossessed aristocratic heir or heiress who was washing up on English shores. After Charles I was beheaded in 1649 and Oliver Cromwell and the Protectorate took over England, many royalist supporters went into exile on the continent. Following the restoration of Charles II in 1660, many of those aristocrats returned to England, often with their wealth depleted by the 11 years of civil war. It's a bit strange that she pretended to be German, feels like that could have easily been disproven, but There were enough dispossessed aristocrats floating around London at the time that it was believable for the kings, or at least there were enough stories of dispossessed aristocrats floating around London at the time. And as if a goose laying a golden egg had dropped into their lap, the kings sprang into action to retain this princess in their grasp. They introduced her to Mrs. King's brother, 18-year-old John Carleton, who was a law student and, they claimed, had some kind of aristocratic connections, that he was a lord. Not even 3 weeks later, on April 19th, they were married. And then on April 21st, they were married again, this time with a marriage license. Clearly, sometimes you have to do things a little out of order, you know, for the drama. Later, Mary wrote a pamphlet about this time, and in it, she presents the story as if she was deceived and pressured into this marriage. John claimed he would kill himself if they didn't marry. He claimed he was aristocratic. He claimed he was wealthy. And now we've returned back to where I began today's episode. Now named Mary Carleton and on her third husband, things quickly began to unravel for the young woman. Or so it seemed. The couple's union was clearly troubled to begin with, based on lies as it was, but the real issue came, supposedly, from an anonymous source, a terrible letter sent not to John Carleton, but to Mr. King. It read, quote, "Sir, I am an entire stranger to your person. Yet common justice and humanity oblige me to give you notice that the pretended princess, who has passed herself upon your brother, Mr. John Carleton, is a cheat and an impostor. If I tell you, sir, that she has already married several men in our county of Kent, and afterward made off with all the money she could get into her hands, I say no more than could be proved were she brought in the face of justice. That you may be certain I am not mistaken in the woman, please to observe that she has high breasts, a very graceful appearance, and speaks several languages fluently. Yours, unknown, TB. Now, this strikes me as strange. This is the second time that this woman has been caught for bigamy. And yes, obviously, England had marriage registers that one could check to see if someone had been married before. But who was this person that was reporting on her? And how did they know that a young woman in London had once been married to someone far off in Canterbury? Is someone stalking her? Did they threaten to notify the nobleman in Cologne too? Is that why she ran off? Now, in Ernest Birnbaum's book, The Mary Carleton Narrative, 1663 to 1673, a missing chapter in the history of the English novel, that was the full title, sorry. In Ernest Birnbaum's book, he says that a friend of the king's had become suspicious of Mary and wrote to someone living in Dover to ask about her. But he notes that no one is sure why this friend became concerned or how he knew to write to someone in Dover. And if it was a friend of the letter writer undertaking some sleuthing, then why did the letter writer claim to be, quote, an entire stranger to Mr. King? Birnbaum's book makes it clear that the person living in Dover did not write directly to King, but to their mutual friend, so there are definitely pieces missing from the tale. Now, I have a theory that Mary herself sent this letter, perhaps asking her maid to be the one to write it to disguise her handwriting. By the time the letter reached Mr. King in late April, it would have been clear to Mary that she had been lied to as well. John Carleton was not a wealthy aristocratic lord, and the kings were just vintners. Maybe she wanted a fast way out of this marriage at a time when divorce was difficult and an annulment a long process. Now, I know what you're thinking. At this time in English history, bigamy was a felony that could be punished with the death penalty. This is an enormously risky move on her part. My guess is that she thought she could persuade them to pay her to go away. She had already successfully persuaded them that she was a German aristocrat, despite only living in Germany for 2 years, so she clearly has some sort of power of persuasion, right? And in fact, one of her biographers wrote, quote, "John himself, though his faith was shaken by the revelations, was still under the spell of her personality and desired, if possible, to dismiss her without punishment, provided this could be done without injury to his own reputation," end quote. So if it had been up to John, Mary might have simply disappeared into the night again. But she might have had good reason to think that even if that didn't work, convincing the family to pay her off, she might have been able to get away with it anyway, and she might have known that. So let's get into it. On May 6, Mary was arrested for bigamy again and brought to Newgate Prison. She was allowed to have guests while there, including the famous Restoration diarist Samuel Pepys. Some people claim she charmed even her jailers, convincing them to bring her good food and loaning her money, which of course she never repaid. Meanwhile, her story quickly spread through London, and she became the subject of many best-selling pamphlets, each speculating about her real identity. She first appeared in court on June 4, 1663. She was charged with assuming a false identity and marrying John Carleton with it, as well as being a bigamist. In her defense, Mary claimed that she was Henrietta Maria von Walway, and that John had actually deceived her by claiming to be a lord. She claimed that he was only charging her with bigamy because he had found out that she didn't actually have the £80,000 annuity that she had claimed she had, and he wanted to marry someone with money. Both parties published pamphlets defending themselves, each claiming that the other was the liar and cheat. A lot of people believe that Mary's, titled The Case of Madame Mary Carleton, was probably ghostwritten by someone else with her input. This is definitely possible, but when I read it, I was struck by how similar it seems to many, like, pastoral romance novels of the time. There's innocence and deceit and this sort of, like, romantic notion of exploring the world, which is similar to the novels she was said to love. It's also surprisingly persuasive, and when I was reading it, I found myself thinking that maybe she really was an innocent German princess until I sort of shook myself out of that spell that, I mean, she was casting across centuries. Now, as the case progressed, it became clear that the kings had made a fatal error. Like in the trial started by surgeon Thomas Day, they had not secured the appearance of Thomas Stedman. Without any proof that Henrietta Maria was really Mary Stedman, née Motors of Canterbury, the prosecutors once again could not prove her guilt. And this is what makes me think that she sent the letter. I think she somehow knew that neither Thomas Stedman nor Thomas Day were going to come forward and say that they had also married her, whether it was because they had no clue the trial was going on or because they had their own motivations to stay away. I think it's possible that Mary knew she'd never be found guilty if the kings turned her in. And she was right. The court acquitted. She wasn't found innocent, exactly. As Lily points out, hearsay was not legally admissible in court. So really, she was not found to be not legally married to John Carleton. The marriage stuck, and the charges didn't. She was quoted as saying to John, "You cheated me, and I you. You told me you were a lord, and I told you I was a princess, and I think I fitted you." Mary Carleton became ridiculously famous, and in April 1664, she starred in a play titled The German Princess, playing, of course, the title character. She was apparently so convincing on stage that she was showered with gifts from her admirers, and it gave her the chance to say her piece publicly. Her last soliloquy from the play goes, quote, "I've passed one trial, but it is my fear. I shall receive a rigid sentence here. You think me a bold cheat, put case 'twere so, which of you are not? Now you'd swear I know. But do not least that you deserve to be censored worse than you yet can censor me. The world's a cheat, and we that move in our degree do exercise our wit. And better 'tis to get a glorious name, however got, than live by common fame." Now, fortunately or unfortunately, famous English diarist Samuel Pepys saw the play and recorded his opinion. Quote, "Never was anything so well done in earnest, worst performed in jest upon the stage." Apparently, the play was canceled after a single night, but Mary still managed to scam two of her wealthy fans out of £300 each, which is about £51,000 today. That's almost $65,000 each. Some people think she married one of her fans, a 50-year-old man named Mr. Chamberlain. I guess the divorce with Carleton went through. It's also possible they were just lovers, I suppose, and also that the divorce with Carleton didn't go through. Chamberlain gave her valuable jewelry and an allowance of £400 a year. One night, she got him ridiculously drunk and absconded with the jewels, a lot of money, and, apparently, somehow, his writing desk with the keys to the drawers within. History sort of loses track for her for a little while after this point. Many believe that she was running around the UK posing as a virgin heiress, fleeing an undesirable suitor under several aliases. To make the ruse more believable, she would have acquaintances send her fake letters containing, quote, news of her, quote, family. She would ensnare men and then run off with their money, as she had to Chamberlain. Many of these aliases surfaced in court documents alleging thefts, Maria Darnton, Maria Lyon, Mary Black, Mary Curtin, and Mary Carlston are among the aliases she used. And even though the public fervor over the German princess scandal had faded, Mary was so famous after it that it became a bit difficult to continue her grift. She kept getting recognized, and after several years of light criminal activity, she was transported to Jamaica in 1671. Transportation was sort of like exile, a sentence that was supposed to be lighter than the death penalty. But it carried with it the warning that if a transported person returned to England, they would be executed. And of course, that's exactly what Mary did. We don't know exactly when she got back to the UK or how, but by 1673, she'd been caught back in London. She was arrested for an unrelated crime, but when she was brought to prison, the guard recognized her from her first celebrity trial. He connected her to the German princess story, and she was convicted and hanged soon after. She was around 40 years old. Now, I don't normally cover outright criminals, but I've been thinking about Mary Carlton, the German princess, and Grey Widow since I researched Aphra Behn for my book. The two women were running around Restoration England at the same time, capitalizing on the uncertainty of the Restoration to further their untraditional goals. Both women towed the line of crime and innocence. Behn, who worked as a spy, then a writer, was seen as barely a step above a prostitute. Both women were seen as having masculine spirits because they had agency and were the driving force of their own lives. Mary Carlton even comments on this in her own pamphlet. She, or her ghostwriter, wrote, quote, "I felt some such strong impulses and natural instincts to be ranging abroad and in action as the first finders of terra incognita were urged with, to the discovery of those regions of whole existence they had no further assurance than their own hopeful bodings and divination. The customary severity of such dealing with that sweetness and tenderness of our sex did much grate me, and I blindly wished I were, what my inclinations prompted me, a man, and exempt from that tedious life, which yet was so much worse because it was altogether passive and sedentary." So in this, she's saying basically that she'd always had these more masculine, quote-unquote, impulses to explore and see the world. She didn't want to be a wife at home with children. And that was what had driven her to tell these lies and make these deals and keep running. Though during her time, Mary Carlton was seen as almost hyper-feminine, she was beautiful, innocent, seductive, somehow both Madonna and whore, her independence and her attitude rendered her, quote, unwomanly. Mary's masculine spirit became physical through accusations that she practiced cross-dressing. With these accusations, people were rendering her into a recognizable archetype like the famous thief and fence Mary Frith, who had cross-dressed in addition to her crimes and had passed away just a couple years before Mary Carlton returned to England from Germany. In fact, a memoir attributed to Frith was published in 1662, just before Mary Carlton's famous celebrity trial as the German princess. Many people read it, including, probably, Mary herself. And despite the clear criminality of her tale, she robbed, by my count, at least 10 people. There's something about her in her story that is often rendered as almost heroic. It's Robin Hood-esque, especially these days. In a world that didn't allow women much agency or many rights, Mary Carlton stole some for herself, and for that, she is often beloved. If you liked this story, you will love my book, Unruly Figures, 20 Tales of Rebels, Rulebreakers, and Revolutionaries That You've Probably Never Heard Of. You can let me know your thoughts about this or any other episode on Substack, Twitter, and Instagram, where my username is unrulyfigures. If you have a moment, please give this show a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really does help other folks discover the show. Now, this podcast is researched, written, and produced by me, Valerie Castellanos-Clark. If you are into supporting independent research, please share this with at least one person you know. Heck, start a group chat. Tell them they can subscribe wherever they get their podcasts, but for ad-free episodes and behind-the-scenes content, come over to unrulyfigures.substack.com. If you'd like to get in touch, send me an email at hello@unrulyfigurespodcast.com. If you'd like to send us something, you can send it to P.O. Box 27162, Los Angeles, California, 90027. Until next time, stay unruly.